Today I want to talk about making it safe for yourself. Make it safe for yourself. If I say so myself, I think this is a great idea. If we had this idea as we were came into physical form, you know, before we decided to incarnate, our lives would be completely different if we knew we need to make it safe for ourselves. Over the course of our lives, we would have done more, we would have had more, we would have come into, we would have been more, right? We'd be more because we would have come into a fuller expression of our potential. Because I think it's that fear of being unsafe that holds us back from so many things. Fear tells us, uh-oh, it's dangerous and possibly painful if we express ourselves, if we reach for something, if we do something, if we say something. Make it safe for yourself. This week we got a bill from our home insurance company for one of our properties. The cost went up $140 for the year, $140 for the year. I thought about it. I said, in the last several years, Florida has had no hurricanes, no natural disasters, we've had no claims, and we've had no accidents. In other words, there was nothing that I could discern that would justify or cause, on our end, for the effect of a rate increase. Presumably, we pay the insurance company to protect us, to make it safe for us to have property. In many cases, home insurance companies and home insurance are required by the bank that holds the mortgage to keep their investment safe. It's not about the homeowners, it's about their investment. Well, we don't have a mortgage on that property, so that's not the issue. It's like, make it safe for yourself. Within about a mile from our home, where we live, a gun store and a shooting range is being built. Now, Naples, Florida is an affluent, very white area, so this seems kind of weird and out of place to have a gun store shooting range in between a Walgreens drugstore and a restaurant next to a bunch of restaurants next to a medical building. It's like, okay. But on the other hand, one of my neighbors told me that some of our other neighbors have been stockpiling food and weapons in preparation for the coming apocalypse. They started to try to make it safe for themselves prior to the last presidential election, just in case anybody with a skin darker than theirs got elected as president. Well, the apocalypse hasn't come, but I'm thinking they still are preparing for it. So people who resort to buying and carrying guns are attempting to make it safe for themselves. But the facts indicate that the more guns are in circulation, the more people carrying these things openly and with concealed weapon permits, the more dangerous it is for people, including the people carrying the gun. Recently, some 71-year-old guy shot somebody else to death in a movie theater over texting and popcorn. In Florida, we have stand your ground as a concept. If you come to my house and you, you don't have to do anything, but if I have the perception that I'm in danger of, I can shoot you. I can shoot you to death and go, oh, well, I was afraid that Girl Scout was trying to, poison me with the cookies? I don't know. But it's weird how we try to make ourselves safe and fail. Lots of human activity and lots of laws are devoted to the idea of making it safe for us. And in some cases, we need to be grateful for that. Traffic signs, street lights, seat belt requirements. You know that was governmentally instituted, right? Seat belts. And all the safety requirements of automobile manufacturers, they resisted. They fought it and complained. And as soon as they put them in, they go, ah, look at how safe our cars are now. It's like, dude, you weren't interested in making it safe for us. We forced that issue. It's like, oh. Speed limits, policing, a lot of things are viewed as attempts by other people to impose restrictions, limitations, controls on us to make it safe for us. Some cases it works. Some cases it's just a limit on freedom. The responsibility to make it safe for you is yours. The responsibility to make it safe for me is mine. When we, you and me, as individuals and as a society, go, you know what, it's my responsibility individually, and when we take on that responsibility, we're going to be better off as individuals and as a society. And when we recognize that these external means, guns and other weapons, attack dogs and alarm systems and all the rest of the ways, these laws that are arbitrarily applied, they're not equally applied as anybody who knows when they have darker skin than us white folk, they're going to be like, there are different rules for you guys than there are for us. Yeah, there are. Those things don't actually make it safe. They're pretend safety measures. They make it unsafe. They make it unsafe for a lot of people. And when we recognize that this is what's going to happen, we're going to start working on internal means to achieve a sense of safety instead of these external activities and things like guns. The internal, that means we will make it safe for ourselves in our awareness. We'll work on our mindset, we'll work on our attitudes, we'll work on our perceptions. We have a right and a responsibility to make it safe for ourselves. But here's the part that gets lost. We do not have a right to make it unsafe for everyone else or anyone else. The questions, how can I make fill in the blank safer for myself? How can I make fill in the blank safer for myself? And how can fill in the blank be made safer for me? I'll repeat that. How can fill in the blank be made safer for me? Those two questions could serve us very well. In those blank spaces, well, we could put pretty much anything, right? We could put in projects that we're considering or that need to be done, that we want to do, or jobs or aspects of our jobs or any kind of activity. You know, how could I make driving to New York safer for myself? And you can go on and on. And when we start asking questions like that, we start reaching for the answers. A question is a reach for the answers. It's a reach for the awareness that will answer that question, that will solve that problem, that will handle that challenge. Since insecurity, along with abandonment and loss of privacy, are the three major fears that occur naturally when we start physical life, when we're born, as we just get individualized, right? Snip that umbilical cord, now I'm an individual. It's like, so I've got abandonment issues because of that disconnection. I've got insecurities because I've gone from one safe, predictable environment into this who knows what's going on in this cold, loud, noisy, unpredictable environment. And loss of privacy. You know, women being encouraged to give birth, you know, there they are on their backs, avoiding gravity, which naturally would help in that process, on their backs, legs up in stirrups, and it's like, any privacy issues here? All that is designed for the convenience of other people, not for the baby, not for the mother. That goes to show the priorities that we have. We're not interested in making it safe for the baby or the mother. In those cases, we're trying to make it safe for the attending physician so they're not subjected to lawsuits. It's like, well, that's what the birth process is, avoiding lawsuits? And doesn't that seem a little bit weird? Yeah, it does. So if we could handle insecurity, and insecurity actually involves these dark doctors bombarding the baby and the mother with insecurity. I subscribe to a medical newsletter, Medscape, written by doctors, controlled by doctors, edited by doctors. And they did a survey, and this is their results of why there is an increase of cesarean sections. This is the main factor. The anxiety level of the doctor. The anxiety level of the doctor. If that guy or gal is worried about a lawsuit, cesarean, if they're worried about their own competence, cesarean, if they're worried about the baby, cesarean, the mother, cesarean, but you can imagine that making it safe for mother and baby are pretty far down on that list of priorities. That's not what the anxiety is about. It's about protecting their own self-interest. So if we could handle insecurity, if we could make it safer for ourselves, those other two fears, being abandoned, being disconnected, and loss of privacy, I think would automatically diminish. So those two questions that I asked, and there could be many, many more, could help us shift our focus from lack of safety to an openness and a reaching for more safety. And the way to be safer is more awareness. If we know when to zig and when to zag, then we're going to zig at the appropriate time and zag at the appropriate time, stop at the appropriate time and go at the proper time, and then we're going to be less vulnerable. We'll be safer. When we no longer focus on the problem, but instead focus on the desired solution, we are already shifting our vulnerability to protection. We are actually, by doing that, making it safe for ourselves. If we consider any project, any activity, anything that you want to do, need to do, should do, have to do, are expected to do, that demand is likely to trigger a reaction in us. It's what they do. It's what they do. You put your attention on something, it's going to trigger a reaction. That reaction will be instantaneous. It happens so quickly, reactions are unbelievably fast. They're a survival thing. It's how we process information. And for most people, it happens so fast, they didn't know it happened. They don't know why it happened, but it can cause an emotional imbalance. Whoop, all of a sudden they got these feelings, and they're not aware, they're not mindful of what just got processed. Here's the good news. That reaction only needs to be perceived and understood to be the first wave of energy that erupts or floods us when we put our attention on an object or a condition or a person or a thing. If we resist that feeling or take it as gospel, I don't need any more information. We got a problem. If we resist it, it's going to persist. If we take it as gospel, it's the only information I need, we're going to hold on to it and then act based upon that initial reaction. And there are negative consequences to that. But if we can hold on for another half a second, quarter of a second, not very long, just a teeny, teeny bit of time more, and observe what comes next, I'll call it the second wave of it, and this, instead of a reaction, is, I'll call it cognition, a thoughtfulness of awareness. Our perception of the wave's nature is going to be different. It can start like this. And if we wait, it then becomes, oh, wow, that's interesting. Oh, that's kind of cool. Let me see what that's about. Two different experiences entirely. There were studies done of this, and I've mentioned this previously on these Sunday talks. Somebody wanted to do a research about looking at faces that were different than one's own. So they took a group of white people, put them in a room, certain demographic, and they hooked them up to all kinds of instrumentation. And then they showed them slides up on a screen of Afro-American faces. Slide, click, slide, 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 slide. And they were amazed at the stress level of the test subjects. They decided to do something different the next time. Same kind of people, same demographic, same instrumentation, same slides, only this time they showed the slides at a slower pace. Slide, 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 slide. And they watch that spike of energy, that stress, and then quickly it subsided. Spike subsided. Spike subsided. So in interviews after the fact, they asked these people, well, what was your impression about, you know, those faces? Oh, you know what? Looked like a movie star. Looked like an athlete. Looked like a friend of mine that I remember from grade school, high school. Looked like... But the other people didn't have the time to find that thought, that deeper memory. It only was a reaction. Said another way, they only had time enough to judge the book by its cover, and they based it upon that, and their bodies had that physiological reaction, end of story. And those people that had a quarter of a second more, half a second more, could actually process this information at a higher level of awareness, less like a caveman, more like a civilized person. There's another concept that we see in life all the time, but we may not fully appreciate it. It is the idea of gradients, G-R-A-D-I-E-N-T-S, gradients. Not complicated. Think of it like the steps of a stairway leading upward or downward. Those, it's, yep, got it. So, I bet you've walked upstairs, I certainly have, the steps were too high. I've been in old buildings, say, in Europe, and walking up these steps, and this is true in Latin America as well, they were designed, and it's like, wow, these are high steps. Going up those things, you got to hold on to the railing or the walls, and coming down those steps, it's even more precarious. It's like, oh, this is not that safe. Like, it's hard to maintain balance. And in other cases, I've walked up steps that were like baby steps. And this I've experienced in the United States. Like, whoever built these things, they built these steps too close together. You know, maybe because they were dealing with children walking up from the outside into an elevated room. It's like, wow, wow. So the distance between those things were either too high, too far apart, or they were too close, not far enough apart. And those you can think of as gradients, outgradient, too much, too little. We all have natural strides. If you're going for a walk, you know, you just casually be walking, you're going to have a certain natural stride. If you were forced to make a too small a stride or too large a stride, it would make you uncomfortable because it would disturb your natural rhythm, which is this distance, this distance, this distance. And those natural strides and those rhythms are designed to help us maintain our physical center of gravity, right? It's like, oh yeah, you know, this is why we do it. This is what we get used to. Longer-legged people would do typically a longer stride. Shorter-legged people, different strides. Smaller people, shorter stride, right? Kids, smaller strides. Adults, bigger strides. I remember this time when I was in the U.S. Army getting trained to become a paratrooper. A lot of running to become physically stronger to build up our stamina, right? But occasionally we would run in formation all the time, but at a moderate rate. I'll call it, it was more like a shuffle. It wasn't really running, it was shuffling. So the strides were about 12 inches long. And doing that, it was amazed to me the first time that happened, is my legs started to ache. The stride was too small for me. And and you'd think, little strides, baby strides, that should be really, really easy. But it wasn't. It wasn't. They were out gradient. It was not my natural stride. It was not how I wanted to run. So it was like, they were too small for me. That gradient was too small. Think of a small child. Small children trying to walk are learning about gradients and center of gravity, right? Not that you're going to sit down. Little baby, let me talk to you about a couple of concepts here. Think of it in terms of physics. That's not what we do. We're not going to talk to them about gradients and center of gravity. But we'll notice they will learn. If they take too big a step, they're going to lose their center of gravity, fall. Take too little a step, they're going to lose their center of gravity, because the center of gravity already shifted forward, they're going to fall. They will learn. They will learn how to manage the gradient of steps and strides and their center of gravity. Or, if they don't, they will not walk. Here's good news for you and me, and it's really good news, is that we can decide on the first steps of any activity that we want to engage in, so we can make it safe for ourselves. Now, we already know how to walk. We know how to run. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about any kind of other project, anything that we want to create, anything we want to do with our minds, our emotions, our physicality. We can make it safe for ourselves by identifying the steps that are still comfortable, that allow us to maintain our center of gravity. Frankly, this is how we get ourselves to do anything. Anything. If you look at something and you can't get yourself to do it, it's because you haven't identified that first step. It's like, a lot of people complicate the hell out of things by, I want to start a business. I don't know, what color copper should I have in my office when I'm, what? You've gotten way ahead of yourself. You complicate things with those kind of details, and you imbalance yourself emotionally. You make it difficult to maintain your center of gravity, and you bring yourself to a stop. Have you ever heard a business owner, or in all likelihood, a parent say this? If I knew it would be this difficult, I wouldn't have done it. But because people choose a comfortable first step, starting a business. Hey, I want to start a business. I thought up a name. Okay, I'm in business. Or having sex. Oh, that's pretty easy. Let's have sex. Then the next steps toward business ownership or parenthood happen automatically. It's like, You and I, all of us, have experiences of doing things that were out gradient, which led to physical or emotional pain. If you and I fell from overstriding when we were trying to walk, as little children, we were learning how to walk, we probably didn't suffer very much pain. Because in all likelihood, somebody was right there being a cheerleader. Oh, you can do it. Good boy. Good girl. Yeah. Good. Try again. That was great. Yeah, right? And we tried again. And we tried again. And pretty soon, we were walking. However, if we were out with our friends playing, let's say we were 5 years old or we were something else, and if we fell and hurt ourselves on a sidewalk, or we did something else that was awkward, in which we were out gradient, then another child made fun of us, they humiliated us, we became embarrassed, we would have experienced both physical and emotional pain. And then, things changed for us. But it's not only about our own centers of gravity and gradients that we have to be concerned with. We can exceed our own. I mean, that's clear, right? We can exceed our own center of gravity that keep us balanced. But we can also exceed other people's, too. Building relationships. Think of that. Building relationships. Building relationships is kind of like a progressive activity where we go from being strangers to having a closer relationship, in some cases intimate, and not just sexual, but really close friends with somebody else. But not all relationships progress through that full spectrum. But you can see if in a relationship, you know, as you meet somebody for the first time, that closeness does start to increase. And the distance between our realities. What do you think? What are your beliefs about God? What are your beliefs about this? What kind of food do you like to eat? Right? Our realities are going to start to sync up or not. If they're really divergent, it's going to be a very short relationship. Right? Okay. Oh, you believe in cannibalism and eating wheat. Okay. Yep. I'm opposed to both of those as concepts. So, yep. Okay. As this closeness can develop, and the way that does is through communication. Communication is like the ultimate solvent. It'll bring us closer together. Tell me about how you feel. Tell me about how you feel. Tell me how. And as we communicate about our realities, our physicalities are going to grow closer and closer. This kind of communication in a relationship of sexual partners is like foreplay. It's like we're getting closer and closer. Now our bodies are close together. We can hold hands. We can kiss. We can make love. We can be friends. We can hug. It's like yeah. But sometimes that doesn't really happen. As a child, I once repeatedly addressed an adult teacher by his first name in a public setting. It was actually on a baseball field, 8 or 10 years old. Come on, dude, you can do it, you can do it. He was pitching, and I was giving pep talks. I was a shortstop. And this is how you do it when you play baseball. You encourage that. You talk it up as we say. But this guy finally went ballistic and started screaming at me. Who do you think you are? It's like screaming and screaming. That was traumatic. That was traumatic for me. I had never heard him called anything except by that name, dude. I like that word, dude. And his real name was Richard, but nobody ever referred to that. Nobody ever called him coach. I never heard him referred to as anything other than dude. I was about 10 years old, and guess what? Guess what? In retrospect, to this man, my familiarity addressing him by his first name was outgradient. That's not what our relationship was. I didn't know that. I was a little kid. I didn't understand gradients. I missed that class. My parents never explained, let's talk about gradients and center of gravity, Tom. I must have fallen asleep, or I was missing anyway. I could have been up in a tree or something. His reaction to me, though, was outgradient. He goes, Tom, come here. Please call me something else. Okay. But over the years, he was a high school baseball coach, assistant football coach, and a social studies teacher, so I dealt with him for years and years after that. I watched him, on other occasions, go ballistic during baseball games over an umpire's call. I've seen him go ballistic with other people. So his loss of emotional control with me wasn't unique. Like, yikes. But obviously he saw the situation as attacking his or jeopardizing his identity. I wasn't aware of that. I thought what I was doing was well-intentioned. It was a good behavior. It's what's idealized on a baseball field. But I was acting out gradient, and he let me know about it. Everyone has a center of gravity. I believe we have multiple centers of gravity. So I could say they're related to being, doing, and having. I could say they're related to the 12 worlds. We have a spiritual center of gravity, a mental center of gravity, an emotional center of gravity, a physical center of gravity, a family center of gravity, a career center of gravity, a financial center of gravity, a social center of gravity, leisure center of gravity, community center of gravity, political center of gravity, and a maintenance center of gravity. And there are probably more. And it's not quite so simple as even that complexity. For example, a person's center of gravity about his or her looks could be strong, but they could be very unsure of using their physicality to bring ideas into physical manifestation. Oh, I can't use my body for that. Oh, I can't use my hands for that. Oh, I can't use my... So they look good physically, but they're not able to use their physical assets to their advantage. Ideas related to money could imbalance a person whose reality is built upon beliefs of scarcity and not enoughness. So soon as you talk about money, they start to shake. You go, oh, wow, interesting. Interesting. We might want to take a look at that. And this is what we want to do. To make it safe for yourself, make it safe for ourselves, make it safe for myself, we're going to want to make the ground that we stand on be firm and reliable. We're not walking on tight ropes. We're not trying to walk across quicksand. We want a firm foundation. If you look at human behaviors, you're going to notice that people jump out of airplanes for fun. They climb mountains for fun. They run marathons for fun. They bungee jump off of bridges for fun. At first glance, you go, like, these people are not making it safe for themselves. What the hell are they doing? However, the point is that their perceptions make it safe for themselves. When I was a paratrooper in the Army, I felt safe in planes getting ready to jump. I felt even safer when I was the jump master. That's the guy in charge that tells people when it's time to jump. And then when the last person jumps, you follow out the aircraft. I love that. I love that. If we can control our perceptions, we control our safety. We make it safe for ourselves. Bruce Lipton says, hey, perceptions are what activate or leave inactive the genes we have. He says that instead of feeling unsafe because we have a certain genes, I have genes, we can develop ourselves spiritually, mentally, and emotionally to improve our perceptions. Improving our perceptions makes it safe for ourselves. In those examples I mentioned, parachuting, climbing, running, and bungee jumping, all of those have a relationship with gravity. Parachutists know they're going to fall to the earth due to gravity. The skill is to control the rate of the fall, right? You don't want to plummet like a rock. You're like, oh, I'm coming down slowly, 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 and I want to land skillfully so nothing is broken. Okay, I got it. Climbers know that the control of their bodies and their positions on the mountains they're climbing, it's all relative to gravity. And if they can manage that, it's going to keep them safe. Runners, they have to contend with gravity every time they pick up a foot, move it ahead of the other foot, and put it down again. Boom, boom, boom. There's a tremendous relationship with gravity right there. Bungee jumpers, they thrill themselves by letting gravity pull them down to the earth, while at the same time, at the last minute, the bungee stops them. It interrupts their fall. I've already mentioned center of gravity. I mentioned gradients. I mentioned perceptions. I mentioned the ground you're standing on. And by ground, I'm not just talking about earth, dirt, floor. I mean your beliefs, your assumptions that you have about life, about God, about yourself, about others, about doing things, about being things, about having things. And instead of the letter C-O-G standing for center of gravity, they could also mean centered on God. This loving intelligence is responsible for gravity and everything else. Everything else we see and experience is a result of this loving intelligence. Being centered on God can make it safe for you. I say can, not necessarily will, make it safe for you, because to be safe, because we're centered on God, requires that we have a commitment to connecting, to knowing, to understanding, and experience that loving intelligence in our daily thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. You know, I mean, there's a habit involved in this. Truly knowing what God is and how it works is the ground that you and I want to stand on. This is the source of all safety. And it's this connection to your Creator that really keeps you and I safe. In the examples I talked about, jumping out of airplanes, climbing mountains, running marathons, and bungee jumping, all have extra safety precautions in place. Parachutists wear two chutes, one main parachute and one safety parachute in case the main one doesn't open or it malfunctions. Climbers are connected by ropes that are anchored to pitons, which are knocked into, hammered into the mountains they're climbing on. Marathon routes, you look at them. There are all kinds of water tables and stations set up, and there are first aid stations and ambulances all over the place. And bungee jumping, those guys have safety ropes involved in that as well. We would do well to know that we have protection available to us at all times. Trouble is, it's invisible. But because it's invisible, we still need to focus our attention on it to know for ourselves, to build up this faith, to build up this trust that we are safe. It's a perception, it's a mindset, it's an attitude. Both I and my clients, and I bet this is true for you too, have had experiences of being made safe without any conscious attention in that moment. Something extraordinary happened, like, wow, that might have prevented injury or death. And looking back at those experiences, it's like, I can't explain it. They're inexplicable unless we can attribute them to divine protection. And I do. Abraham of Abraham Hicks describes this concept of segment intending as a way to make yourself safe and peaceful. By looking at your day's activity as segments, little chunks of time, little chunks of activity, such as waking up, that's a segment, getting out of bed, that's a segment, washing up, eating breakfast, getting dressed, leaving for work, traveling to work, are all segments. You can set your intention before you start on any segment. Those intentions could be to be safe, to enjoy the activities in that segment, to pay attention, to be mindful, this is something that happened with a client. He thought he needed to be angry about his commute to work because there were cars on the road. No, you don't have to. You can set your intention to enjoy it. I can? Yeah, it's just an intention. Enjoy it. It's like, We can set our intention to display certain characteristics in any and all of those segments, one segment at a time. You can decide to be kind or compassionate or friendly or happy or accepting or any number of things. In other words, we can make ourselves safe by intending to be safe. Being safe is affected by our perceptions and our intentions. That's how we do it. Aligning with the source of all safety, intending it. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. Can you hear the promise of safety in that? We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. Wouldn't that make us safer? We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. Another reference to us being safe. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. Help others to be safe. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. And here's the last sentence, also devoted to safety. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.